This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living, in for his monthly show. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. And today's discussion is very simple, very interesting. Whether or not it hurts when you sit. Sometimes it feels uncomfortable when you sit down. Sometimes sitting relates to pain and soreness. It can affect some parts of the anatomy, your groin, your tailbone, your sacrum, your lower back. You're told to sit cross-legged. Some of us sit without a backrest. Some of us sit for far too long. So he's here to explain and help us understand why it hurts sometime. Welcome to the show, Dr. Rajesh. How are you today?
Thanks, Mira. Well, thank you.
What muscles and joints? Oh, before I start, phone lines are open, 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. I was reading an article about how sitting is going to kill us in the end, Dr. Rajesh. I mean, do you think it's very harsh? But that's, of course, not looking at the musculoskeletal system, but it's looking at the fact that we don't move enough, and that could lead to heart disease, a whole spectrum of issues.
Okay, so let's separate the issues out. The early issue was in relation to cardiovascular disease. So the body's used to getting a certain amount of energy in, a certain amount of energy out. If you don't match that energy expenditure, then you have excess buildup of, let's say, fat, which is obviously not healthy. So taking aside the sort of metabolic issues of being sedentary. So that's probably a separate thing of being sedentary. What we're looking at the moment is we're just looking at whoever you are, whatever you do, when you're sitting down, it hurts. That's where we're looking at. And if it hurts, as you know, my model is to always try to identify what individual structure hurts. So here you're going to have to know some anatomy. So sort of anatomy spoiler. And if these terms don't sound familiar, you know, open Google and go look at a skeleton. The first thing is, if you're seated now, wherever you are, you know, be it in the car, in the office, just consider what is your posture, what is your position. Are you actually aware of how you're seated? What's the position of your knees? Are your knees tucked in under the chair? If you're sitting on a chair, are they out in front of you? Are they at 90 degrees? What's the position of your thigh? Do you feel your thigh is well supported? So do you feel a firm pressure right from the back of the knee all the way to the buttocks? Or is there more pressure one place or another? And do you feel any awareness of pressure on your lower back or your shoulders? So these are sort of the general contact points, if you want to call them that, when we need to assess the seating position and we want to assess pain when you sit down. I'd like to separate the idea of buttock pain and back pain. So how do you draw where the back stops and where the buttock starts? So if you put your hand on your hips, as in like sort of you're angry putting your hands on your hips, and your fingers go all the way around to the back, that to me is the division between your back, the anatomic back, and the buttock. Anything below that line, I would call buttock pain. Anything above that line, I would call back pain. And it's important to make that distinction, because in this country, for some reason, everybody's obsessed with back pain and MRIs. I've seen lots of people who say, well, I've got this pain, and they're pointing below that line into their deep buttock, and they tell me, I have back pain. I say, you don't have back pain, you have buttock pain. They go, but I've been told I have back pain. I said, well, that's not your back, that's your buttock.
Okay. So when you sit down, which areas are we exerting pressure, or are we overusing some muscles and joints as a result?
So let's look at it this way. If you imagine that sort of cartoon scenario or something you see of TV where somebody passes out and they're sitting, they don't continue being in the same position. They actually change their position when they lose consciousness. So that sort of social scenario should tell you that being seated is actually an active process. To be able to sit upright in a chair actually requires groups of muscles to be coordinated and to be able to function in a way to hold your body up so that it doesn't collapse either forward or backward. I treated a young lady recently who then was given a reasonable dose of painkiller, and she was sitting in a recliner and she was completely sprawled in the recliner because she'd had so much painkiller that she was absolutely asleep. And she looked more like she was lying down rather than sitting down. And when she woke up, she adjusted her position such that she looked like she was sitting rather than she was lying. So there is a difference between the two. Sitting takes energy. Lying down takes much less energy.
Okay. And when you're actually sitting down, have we been made to sit?
Interesting question. I think we've been made to squat. If you say to me, looking critically at the skeleton, what do all the bits line up to do? I think the bits probably line up to squat pretty well. And looking through a sort of human history and evolution and ancient cultures, squatting is one way of resting, which is relatively clearly established across many cultures, across many timelines. Sitting per se, I don't know. I don't think we're necessarily built to sit. I think being in the seated position is a modern phenomenon. I don't think it's sort of an ancient phenomenon. But as I always said, the human body has to adapt to the surfaces that it encounters. And not all modern surfaces are kind. I mean, certainly it's much more comfortable sitting on these padded chairs than it would be squatting on a rock, for example. But I can't imagine that we were built to sit on chairs.
No.
I don't think so.
No, really? Okay. Yeah. And we've done so much injustice to ourselves by creating the chair.
What were the choices? Actually,
you can sit on the ball. You're the one who encouraged me to sit on an exercise ball, and I still do.
You still do, yes. So do I at the office. You know, Mahatma Gandhi said anything that you can't do sitting on the floor is something that's too much. So he was bemoaning the Western tradition of sitting on chairs and how the fact that they couldn't be classes in rural India for lack of tables or chairs.
Yeah, I mean, and also, you know, if you look at our toilets, public toilets now, back in the day you found more squatting toilets and not everyone can squat.
I know everyone can squat. It's just a question of whether you squat flat with your heels flat on the ground or whether you have to squat on the sort of front of the balls of your heels. That's just dependent on how you're biomechanically made. But this idea that everyone should be able to squat, well, not a particular kind of squat. You know, you don't expect everybody to stand in the exact same way. You don't expect everybody to walk in the exact same way. You don't expect everyone to run in the exact same style. So why would you expect everyone to sit or squat in the exact same way?
Okay, so we're discussing sitting today. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. So which are the muscles? I mean, you mentioned buttock pain and you mentioned back pain. So which muscles or joints or are we overexerting when we sit for long periods of time?
Okay, I think the structure I want to bring attention to is this thing called the sacroiliac joint. Now, the sacroiliac joint actually gets very little love, as it were, because it doesn't get its picture taken very often. The spine gets its picture taken much more often, so everybody says it's spine pain. The spinal column sits on a large bone called the sacrum, and then the sacrum has a relationship with the rest of your hip via the sacroiliac joints. Because it's a little bit of a publicity-shy joint that doesn't get its picture taken often, people very often miss it as a source of pain. And the symptoms are really classic. I was treating this gentleman who is a business owner, and he has had treatment for probably 4 or 5 years now, unsuccessfully for his back pain. So when I saw him and assessed him, I said, okay, look, I know from having examined you and having looked at the ultrasound while you're moving that the pain's coming from these structures that support your sacroiliac joint. So he treated those structures and he said, okay, doc, that's great. My back pain's gone away. Years and years of back pain has gone away. But I can't sit down for a long time. I'm in my car. It takes me 45 minutes in the jam to get to work. By the time I get to work, I already know that there's a sense of discomfort that the pain is going to come. It's not there yet, but I know it's going to come. Now, his history is really classic because the first thing he did when he originally had back pain all those years ago was he took 2 weeks of bed rest, complete bed rest for 2 weeks, other than having to go get up to go to the toilet. Now, that's the exact wrong thing to do if you have simple mechanical back pain. And what he had was he had the situation where he's lost muscle mass that supports the joints which coordinate sitting. And as a result of that, what he's got is he's got joint overload. So very simple thing. If I gave you a dumbbell and I said to you, okay, here's a 1 kilo dumbbell. I want you to hold it up for 5 minutes, no problem. Then I say, okay, now instead of a 1 kilo dumbbell, I'm going to give you a 5 kilo dumbbell. And I want to hold you up, want you to hold it up for 5 minutes. Again, no problem. Now I swap the dumbbell out and I say, okay, here's a 10 kilo dumbbell and I want you to hold it without moving for an hour. That sensation that you have of it's really starting to ache. It doesn't hurt per se, nothing's broken, but it's really starting to ache. That's the sensation that this gentleman had, which is perfectly logical because the muscles which coordinate the distribution of load while sitting are not working. Because the muscles can't redistribute load, you then get this overload phenomenon. And the challenge with rebuilding muscles which are wasted is the fact that they don't come back. There's lovely studies which are done in the zero gravity environment. So this is a real problem for people who go into space. When we send astronauts into space and they come back, one of the things that they all develop is they all develop back pain. They develop quite severe intractable back pain. And the reason why they develop the severe intractable back pain is because of a loss of muscle bulk. And the average sort of anti-gravity period associated muscle bulk loss is in the order of 70%. So if you go into space, you lose up to 70% of your back muscles, not your arm muscles, not your leg muscles, because those muscles you're still using while you're in space, but you don't use your back muscles anymore because you're not fighting gravity. So then when they come back to Earth, and these people get studied, as you can imagine, extremely extensively, including MRI, functional MRI, ultrasound, all the electromyographic studies, what we find is the last 20% of the muscle bulk they never get back. No matter how hard you try, you've got the resources of NASA at your disposal, you still don't get the 20% of muscle bulk.
Really?
Back. Yeah, it's very interesting like that. There's something that happens genetically, I wouldn't say genetically, but there's something that happens at the cellular level, at the DNA level, that the cell basically says, well, I don't need to express this protein to build the muscle anymore. And they're trying to work out what that is, because obviously if there's a genetic element and you can reverse it, then you could potentially cure back pain.
Okay, so if you do experience, what's the word you use? Muscle death? No?
No, it's just called atrophy. Atrophy means that the muscle decides to go away, which is not...
It's there.
But it's not...
It's not functioning as the muscle.
It's not functioning as well because it's not strong enough. So go back to that 5 kilo holding weight again. So if I gave you 1 kilo and you said hold it, you know, for 5 minutes, that's different to 10 kilos for an hour. What's the difference? The muscle's the same. The work that you're making the muscle do is a lot more. Now, let's assume that you weaken the muscle by 10 times. That's basically the same thing that happens. The muscle is there. It can create the movement. It just can't strengthen. And that's the real problem. So that's the idea of what happens when you sit down is actually the exact opposite of what you would imagine. When you sit down, you're not at rest. You're actually moving a lot. Well, you should be moving a lot. And what should be happening is the body's basically redistributing weight from structure to structure to structure to structure to distribute the load evenly. And the same thing happens while standing. So if you're standing still and you pay very close attention to what you're doing, you know, if you're in a yoga class or Pilates or martial arts or one of those things where they say to you, be aware of your feet, be aware of what your feet are doing, you'll actually realize that there's a lot of stuff going on in your feet when you're standing. So whether you're standing or you're sitting, it's an anti-gravity posture. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the anti-gravity posture. And a lot of back, buttock kind of pain happens when this mechanism fails. So for me, when I had back pain, the treatment is very simple. I was in the swimming pool every single day, half an hour for about, took about almost 3 months, back pain disappeared. Then I'd get back into the office and into the office chair and the back and buttock pain came back, literally exact back and buttock pain. So that's when I started to sit on the Swiss ball. And it's funny, we were looking through the family photos from when the kids were born. And I saw the state of the ball when it was new. And I look at the state of the ball now and I go, oops, okay, probably time to get a new one.
It's old. It is. You need to inflate
no,
it.
No.
Well.
The one I got is a silicon one. So the silicon ones don't deflate.
Okay.
The rubber ones do.
Maybe I should think of that.
But you know, you got it given as a Christmas present. So
yeah, I know. Okay. I'll take it home for something else.
Okay.
But sitting here, you know, having to inflate it all the time can be a little bit of a chore.
So just a tip: if you're gonna get a Swiss ball, get a silicone one. Don't get a rubber one.
Okay. So we'll come back and find out more about how the Swiss ball makes a difference when you sit down as opposed to sitting on a chair, and try and understand the mechanism going on with the musculoskeletal system in that part that's under pressure. If you have a question about sitting, give us a call. The number 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivisuthi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon in the studio with us. We are discussing, you know, when it hurts when you sit down. Now, we certainly are sitting a lot these days. As Dr. Rajesh mentioned earlier, sitting is an active process. It's anti-gravity, so in a way we're fighting it. And there's a lot of pressure, load, especially in the hip area, to help keep us in that position. And that can lead to pain often in the groin area, in your tailbone, in your buttocks, in your lower back. So we're discussing that. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. We were talking about the Swiss ball. So how different is it sitting on a Swiss ball, Dr. Rajesh? And how is that load reduced when you're sitting on a ball as opposed to a chair?
Okay, so let's take the analogy of a four-legged stool. So when you sit on a four-legged stool, the stool is inherently stable. So each leg of the stool has a fixed amount of load. Now, imagine that your stool only had two legs or one leg, and you sat on the stool. The effort that's required for you to balance off on that stool is very much more different. And that's fundamentally what happens with the Swiss ball. The idea with the Swiss ball is that when you plant your, when you're seated and you plant your 2 feet on the ground, you're two out of three legs of a tripod. In order for you to balance yourself, you have to adjust the third leg, which is basically your center of gravity of your body. So your tailbone, or your seat bone, as the yoga guys call it, when you're sitting, you'll feel a pressure right deep in the buttock. Mm-hmm. So that's the bone that you're sitting on. The medical term for it's called the ischium.
When you're sitting on a chair.
Well, when you're sitting on any surface, that thing that contacts the floor when you are squatting, for example, or you're sitting cross-legged, or you're sitting in a chair, that thing that contacts that seated surface is called the ischial tuberosity. It's actually a specialized bone which is got adaptations to be able to take the load like that. So you actually, if you put it that way, you could say that weight on that area is a evolutionary adaptation. So whether you put it on a chair or whether you're squatting, I think it's probably much the same. Although I think looking at its design, it's probably a little bit still more designed for squatting. I think the ischium is probably still more designed for squatting rather than for sitting in the modern way that we do. So to answer your question, when you sit on a Swiss ball, you're suddenly unstable. And what you have to do is you have to be able to distribute the weight of your body in such a way that you are sitting still. And lots of people come to my office and go, ah, the Swiss ball, I've heard about it. So, you know, I'm going to try it. And I say, fine, have a sit. And when they sit down, they say, yeah, look, you know, I haven't fallen off. I say, yes, okay, you haven't fallen off. But what's happening to your body? And inevitably, they're swaying left, right, forward, or backward because the trunk is trying to compensate for that movement of being unstable. So the idea is there's a spectrum of I'd say normal use and wear and tear. And that spectrum of normal use and wear and tear will lead you to have some degree of functional pain or discomfort, which you can adapt for and change yourself. And then we get into the conditions which need medical treatment. And there's a couple of interesting patients I'm following up right now who actually have true seating pain. So there's one gentleman, he's North American, 6 foot plus, big, big guy. And he can't sit down on any hard surface. He says, I have to sit on a donut or a cushion because his coccyx or tailbone hurts. Now, I've had a look at his coccyx a couple of times. There's a couple of different things that were going on. There was some inflammation, there's some degeneration. But what he's actually got is, at the minute, his pain's coming from a bone spur, a simple mechanical bone spur on the tip of his coccyx. And so he's got like a thorn on the inside, and literally he's sitting on a thorn on the inside. There's another young lady I saw who actually found me through the show. And she had deep-set buttock pain on sitting that went to her privates. That was her complaint. And she had a very rare condition called a pudendal nerve entrapment. So there are lots of nerves that cross from the inside of the pelvis out into the lower limbs. And she had an entrapment of one of those nerves called pudendal nerve entrapment. It's ridiculously rare. And you would never think about looking for it if you didn't know about it. But we treated her, and the pain magically disappeared. She says, my privates don't hurt anymore, which is, you know, kind of those weird things. You wouldn't expect an orthopedic surgeon to be doing that. Mm-hmm. So she said to me, you know, she was at a social event, and she was talking to a gynecologist and said, you know, I had pain in my privates, and an orthopedic surgeon fixed me. And he had this aghast look on his face going, he did what to you?
But what was the treatment option?
Okay, so the pudendal nerve is very deep in the buttock. And it's just where the it exits from the inside of the pelvis out. And the option there is a neurolysis, which is a procedure to free the nerve. It's normally done by cutting the skin. But if you can see the structure with the ultrasound, you can actually guide a device next to the nerve under the ultrasound and just release it using a minimally invasive procedure. And she had that done. And it's got a two-part to it. The first part's a diagnostic where we give a drop of local anesthetic. And we say, does this make your pain go away? And if the answer is yes, then that and only that is the source of your pain. And then the second step's to release the nerve. So the challenge is, the structure is how many centimeters in? Ooh, say probably about 9 centimeters in. So you need to drive a needle that's 9 centimeters long. Okay, so a standard ruler is 6 centimeters, a long ruler is 12 centimeters. So this is between 6 and 12 centimeters. Mm-hmm. So you need to drive a needle that's 9 centimeters long with an accuracy of 0.3 millimeters. That's less than one third of a millimeter to a target that's about 1 millimeter big. And you need to do it without visualizing it in real time. So wow. it's like a very sophisticated computer game.
It is.
So you really have to know where the needle's going, and it's technically very demanding, but it's very satisfying for patients because they can have what would have been an open surgical procedure done in, I would call it pinhole surgery. But
there's also room for error there.
Not if you see the needle. So this is the key. The key is you must never lose sight of the needle tip, and that's the difficulty. So the difficulty is, if you lose sight of the needle tip, then you shouldn't be doing the procedure. And there's a margin for error. The margin for error is one third of a millimeter. So if you can keep it within one third of a millimeter, it's possible to do. If you can't keep it within one third of a millimeter, it's not possible to do.
Okay.
And some people are just not ultrasound friendly, you know. So in some people, it's just not an option. But luckily for her, it was.
So what I'm hearing is, one is, of course, you sit too long, which can cause problems. Mm-hmm. The other is you could have problems already, which could lead to you not being able to sit for very
yes.
long.
And that's really the group of people that I'm starting to see much more now. Okay. I'm starting to see people who say, it hurts in my hip. So it's another gentleman whom I'm treating. He says, my hip hurts when I sit. And the problem is, I'm going to get married and I need to sit on the floor in temple for a long period of time.
I was going to say it's got to be Indian. Because nobody sits for such a long time during a wedding
unless
ceremony.
You're Indian, exactly right. I had my Australian friends come for my wedding. So they said, oh, how long's the wedding? I said, 3 days. We're going to sit down for 3 days. I said, no. You know, that's sort of the actual solemnization part, probably about, you know, an hour, couple of hours. So they said, what do we do at the rest of the time? I said, it's just one huge party. Yeah. You know, just come and have fun. And yeah, so, you know, they went back with very colorful memories. So his problem was he had a slightly abnormal hip. And this I see very commonly in the Asian community. There's a problem called developmental dysplasia of the hip, DDH. That means that the hip is not a perfect ball and socket joint. So when the hip isn't a perfect ball and socket joint, the hip movement's actually quite limited by the soft tissues of the hip joint. So you imagine now you're trying to balance the load and the weight of the body, and one of the joints that you're supposed to load or balance to doesn't work so well. Then what happens? Well, it's just like an office scenario. There's half a dozen people supposed to do the job. Boss comes and distributes work. One guy says, I'm not doing this. Mm-hmm. So the other 11 guys end up doing the job.
And they end up compensating for it.
And they end up compensating for it. And then this guy keeps getting lazier and lazier and lazier. He says, well, you know, obviously things work. I don't have to do the job. Until the proverbial shit hits the fan. And then when everybody has to pull their weight and this guy doesn't, then that's when you get pain. So with this chap, a lot of it was education. Right, so a lot of it was to say, okay, look, I can see where your structural abnormalities are, and this is why I love musculoskeletal ultrasound. I can do the ultrasound while they're moving and show them where the pain is. So this chap was told he had labral impingement of the hip and he needed a hip arthroscopy surgery. Okay, so I said, okay, it's a pretty sophisticated diagnosis. It's very fashionable. It didn't exist 5 years ago. Suddenly everyone's got it. So let's just examine the truth. Let's look at your labrum and let's get you to move and see, is there any mechanical impingement? Nope, no mechanical impingement. Then that's not the cause of your pain. You know. So he needed some education, some reassurance, and a little bit of physiotherapy. And basically what we did for his wedding was we got both of them to sit on cushions. So, you know, just the wedding setup, just an extra layer with a cushion on it. And his cushion had one side slightly higher than the other. So he could actually sit for the period that he had required. Very simple thing to do. Just required a little bit of biomechanical analysis and some thinking.
But you wouldn't recommend sitting on a cushion for long, as in day-to-day, for day-to-day at the office, for an example.
What, on the floor or
on a chair?
Kind of depends how uncomfortable your chair is. If you feel it's mechanically uncomfortable, then by all means, sit on a cushion. I'm seeing elderly people now. It's kind of an odd thing. I'm seeing elderly people who have atrophy of all their muscles. As you get much, much more elderly, you lose muscle bulk, who have buttock pain because they actually don't have enough mechanical cushion. So the fat and the fibrous tissues, which would normally cushion the seat bone, aren't there anymore. So they actually find it uncomfortable to sit for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And it's through no fault of the furniture. It's actually they've lost that padding internally. And so for them, I'd say, yeah, go ahead, sit on a cushion if it makes you more comfortable.
So it's very important in our younger years to keep those muscles going, isn't it?
Yes and no. But you see, life is a terminal sexually transmitted disease.
Thanks.
So at some stage, we all got to go. And in that exit process, there's a very clear pattern of things that happens. And my God, I shudder to think what's going to go through my head when I see those. I'm just going, not happening. Ah, stop. Mm-hmm. But it's the truth of the matter. And I think recognizing it's really important. These older people whom I'm treating, they really wanted principally a tissue diagnosis. They really principally wanted to know what was going on because the children were saying, you know, you're being just complaining for no reason. You know, how can it be that everybody sits in the car and you sit in the car and you say you got pain, right? Everybody sits in the car. It's no different to any other car. And I think one of the things that was really helpful for me to do for them was to do a biomechanical gait analysis and to say, look, your gait's normal. Yeah, if you've got this horribly degenerate spine on X-ray, horribly degenerate spine on the MRI, but that's not the cause of your pain. The cause of your pain is just that you got saggy buttocks, and as a result of the saggy buttocks, you don't have enough cushion. So solution, sit on a cushion. End of story. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is a lady who couldn't travel, right? So her children are spread all over the world. She has to travel to see them and her grandchildren, and she said, oh, I can't sit in aeroplanes. It's just too painful. And she had a simple tendon inflammation for the same reason, because there's not enough cushion, the tendon got irritated, the tendon lining got inflamed, and that was giving her chronic pain. So simple solution, stick a needle in, use a minimal invasive technique to strip the tendon lining away, boom, pain goes away. And she says, is this permanent? I said, not in any means whatsoever. You're going to have to take a cushion to travel with you. If eventually you lose the cushion or don't use it, or you end up sitting too long, the tendon's just going to get inflamed again. And when it does come back, I'll sort that out for you again. But she goes, she was happy with it. Her view was, well, I can travel. I don't need back surgery. And even if I have to have it done every 3 or 4 years, I'm happy to have it done every 3 or 4 years.
But why does she have an inflamed tendon in the first place?
Saggy buttocks. So she's old.
What do we do? We have this thing called gluteus maximus. Can we like do anything and everything to make sure it's still there and it's functioning so we don't have that problem?
You could stop getting older.
So, oh, come on. You're still not shedding any light. I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. It cannot be all that bad.
It isn't all that bad. It's just I see the tip of the iceberg. The majority of the iceberg is still under the water. They're not seeing me. I just see the tip of the iceberg. The idea is there's three gluteal muscles. One, there are two called gluteus medius and minimus, and then there's one called gluteus maximus. Now, just because they share the same name doesn't mean they have any functional relationship to each other at all. You know, one may as well be called, I don't know, Pluto, and the other one called Neptune. They really have no functional relationship. The idea is gluteus maximus is a power muscle. It's used for extending the thigh. So stair climbing, lunges, that develops the gluteus muscles. That's gluteus maximus only. Gluteus medius and gluteus minimus are very, very, very interesting because they function as what we call the rotator cuff of the hip. Now, we've spoken before about the rotator cuff of the shoulder, where there is a group of muscles and the group of muscles form a sleeve of tendon, and the sleeve of tendon degenerates with age. There's something very similar in the hip, and that's another very common cause of sitting pain. Patients will say, where I put my wallet, so men will say, where I put my wallet in the side, that's where it hurts. That's coming from the rotator cuff of the hip. So that's another anti-gravity kind of situation, because those muscles or those tendons are required to control the relationship between your trunk and the thigh bones, the femurs. So when you're seated, if I'm sitting in a chair now, I'm aware that my thighs are on a slight incline down, and the fact that there's a little bit more pressure on my thigh than there is on my seat bone. So what's transferring or controlling the pressure from my thigh to my seat bones is my gluteus medius muscle. And in fact, I'm just going to stretch my leg out because that's starting to ache a little bit.
You're getting old, Dr. Rajesh. And there's nothing very much you can do about it.
Don't tell me. Stem cells. No. Give me some of the good stuff.
We will come back. Stem cells, still not proven. It's still a long way to go, but we'll come back and have that discussion very quickly. And how do you sit the right way to make sure we can minimize this load on the hip? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. If you have just joined us, well, it's Health and Living in the studio with me, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, for his monthly show. We are discussing sitting and, you know, how we all sit for long periods of time and how some of us have pain as a result of that. So after our discussions just now, what I'm sort of hearing is that, one, you sit for long periods of time, it is a bit of a burden on the musculoskeletal system, or it can work the other way around in that you could possibly have a problem already with the musculoskeletal system, which will then lead to pain when you actually sit down. So possible solutions. How do we sit you know, properly, and to make sure we could minimize this. We're not going to stop sitting anymore, but how do we minimize this?
Okay, we learn from my favorite musculoskeletal teachers, children. So if you look at children sitting down, they're never sitting, or the children are never in one position for any time, any prolonged period of time. And I think that's a real lesson in itself. So we hear, I think was it in the newspaper the other day, I saw these standing workstations, mm-hmm. you know, exercise while you work kind of thing.
Well, we have them.
Standing workstations?
But nobody uses them.
Yeah, I see that. It's yeah.
So they've resorted to high chairs to reach the top of the table. We thought it was a good plan, but it didn't quite work out.
Okay. So this is an interesting phenomenon called socialization. So we are socialized to sit at desks and stare at our computers for hours on end. And every time I come into the station, I'm just amazed at how much of it I see. Mm-hmm. It's just pervasive. Your question to me was, what do we do? And the answer is, we fidget. We move and we fidget and we do things all the time. So I can see two people in front of me. One lady's wearing a ready kind of shawl and the other gentleman's in this sort of dark purpley kind of shirt. And the gentleman hasn't fidgeted at all. He's just still. The young lady's just all over the place. She's extremely distracting because she's constantly making little movements, little adjustments, doing little things. She's fidgeting incessantly, and in fidgeting incessantly, what she's doing is she's shifting the load. She's shifting the load from one area to another area to another area to another area. So she'll probably go home not very tired and not very exhausted, and he'll probably go home going, wow, that was a long day at the office. And that's that skeletal system. So if I go back to that example of you having to hold that 10 kilo weight, if I said to you, now you can't move at all, that's very different. If I said to you, you know, move in any way, which posture you like, to get comfortable while you're holding this. So the two are fundamentally different, and obviously the energy expenditure for fidgeting is a lot more, and so your calorie burn is higher, your rate of repair is higher, because we keep getting to this wear, tear, repair thing, and the more years I practice, the more ingrained that becomes. The skeletal system's just subject to wear and tear, and after 25, wear and tear's far greater than repair. Question is just how you manage the balance between the two. So the wear-tear repair cycle is such that in order for you to heal, you need repair. In order for repair, you need movement. We keep saying motion is the lotion. Mm-hmm. And if you're sitting down absolutely still in one posture, then you've got no movement. So you don't get that micro repair that happens on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute, second-to-second kind of basis.
Okay, we have Bobby on the line. Bobby, you have a question. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I recently had a fall on my back, on my buttocks, mm-hmm. and I've done an x-ray, and I had a compression fracture on my T11.
Okay.
So, but I don't actually experience much pain, but do I need to alter my sitting to prevent further injury, or do I need maybe some something to support my back? That's my question.
Okay, thank you very much. You have a question?
Yeah,
for
I do, Bobby. Are you over 50 or under 50?
I am
37. Okay. It must have been a bad fall. A compression fracture in a 37-year-old man is not a usual injury.
Alright.
Okay. So was it a bad fall? Was it from a high place, or was it a high energy fall?
I slipped and I fell and I sat on the staircase.
So you were coming down the staircase, your foot went under you and smacked, the whole weight of your body slammed down on your buttock. Is that right? Okay, so that would be a reasonable mechanism to have a T fracture. Do you know how many percent collapse you have? Is it if they take the vertebra as a rectangle, then they look at the front versus the back. Did they give you a number? How many percent compression you have?
I have no idea actually, because I did not see the specialist. That's the MO that told me the specialist diagnosed as a compression fracture, but the problem is during the examination, I don't feel any pain. So the MO said could have been a previous injury, which I have no idea.
Thank
you very much, Bobby.
Okay, so let's go through a couple of things from this scenario. So the first thing is, Bobby's got no pain now. His question is, I've got this incidental radiological finding. What do I do about it? Now, there's a term called an incidentaloma. So pathologies or things which are something wrong actually has an oma name to it. So you have sort of some sort of tumor is called an adenoma or something like that, right? So there's a radiologist who coined the term incidentaloma, which means that this is an incidental finding on an investigation. And that came about in the mid to late 80s when MRIs became very popular. They were doing lots of MRIs of people's adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. And they were finding these things in adrenal glands. They were completely benign, never going to cause you any harm, just quietly sitting there. That's called an incidentaloma. So what you sound like you have, Bobby, is an incidentaloma, which means that that's a radiological finding which is probably old. And the strongest evidence I have for that is that it doesn't hurt. It's not possible to break a bone without pain. So to answer your question, would you need to change your sitting posture on the basis of a mid-thoracic fracture? I'd say you'd probably just want to be a little bit aware as to whether you're hunching forward or not. That's probably the only thing. And if you're hunching forward, you'd probably want to make sure that you have some mid-back support as a pivot point for you to push back on and to extend your back to make sure that you can rebalance the body's inherent balance mechanism. Beyond that, I don't think there's much to do.
Your message on sitting?
Good question. I think if you take away that sitting is not a passive process, that it's an active process, and there are things that you can do to arrange and manage that active process, I think that would have been a show worth doing.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. If you missed that show, well, it will be available on podcast at the end of the day. Just log on to bfm.my or get the BFM app, actually. You know, it's a lot easier. Coming up, more music, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the Enterprise Takeaway event, which is coming up in July on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.